College Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In-studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please, to John Rothstein. Please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and to break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
Let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Later in this show, we will be joined by Western Kentucky head coach Rick Stansberry, who just landed Charles Bassey, a top five player in the 2019 class, and got him to reclassify into the 2018 class. Want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast on iTunes. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. We are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also, want to remind you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also, send me your questions on Twitter. I'll get to them later in this podcast. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. Today's episode of the College Hoops Today podcast is brought to you by Geico. There's a quick way that could save you money. Switch to Geico. All it takes is 15 minutes to find out if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. And Geico offers you coverage for more than just car insurance. Got a motorcycle? Geico's got you covered. Got an RV? Covered. Got a boat? Covered. How about homeowners or renters insurance? You bet Geico's got you covered. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save. That's geico.com. So, how did we come to Rick Stansberry in Western Kentucky? How did we veer off course? I just want to say this, and I just want to get it out in the forefront out of the gate. The Monday, the Tuesday before the NBA draft on this podcast has always been a draft look ahead. But at my core, I cover college basketball. I will give insight that I have on the NBA draft from talking to different player personnel people and different GMs. But this podcast is veered to the college basketball fan. And I just want to say that pound for pound, inch for inch, I work every single week with the best producer in the history of radio and Tyler Brewer, who is comfortably situated in our West Coast studios. I hope he can hear this. And we had a changing of the guard when Western Kentucky landed Charles Bassey late last week, because the whole thought process on the calendar was we are going to talk NBA draft, and we'll sprinkle in some draft periodically throughout this show. But Charles Bassey changes that. This is a college basketball podcast, the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And now all of a sudden, a player that, okay, was being recruited by the likes of Kansas and others in the 2019 class, didn't just commit to Conference USA in Western Kentucky. He committed and said he's going to play next year. So all of a sudden, Conference USA has a flagship team to track in 18-19. And think about right now some of the other pieces that are returning for Rick Stansberry, who, again, at Mississippi State during his years there, was third in the SEC in victories behind Kentucky and Florida. All of a sudden now, you look at Western Kentucky, you've got a kid that could have went to Kansas and Charles Bassey at the five. You got a player in DeShaun Murray at the four who started for Auburn last year when they went, okay, and won the SEC regular season title. The Tigers shared it with Tennessee. And then you have guys last year who were part of a team that went to the Final Four of the postseason NIT and lost, but also a team that went to the finals of the Conference USA tournament and lost. Guys like Tavion Hollingsworth, Lamonte Bearden, Josh Anderson. So it's probably a little bit early for the casual fan to think about mid-majors to watch for next season, but Western Kentucky is a mid-major to watch, and they're a mid-major, okay, that have beaten several high majors without a player of Charles Bassey's caliber. Think back last season to Western Kentucky. Neutral site wins at the Battle for Atlantis over Purdue and SMU. Wins in the NIT at Oklahoma State, at USC, home against Boston College. And now we have a player who, again, would be touted as a potential one and done if you went to Kentucky or Kansas and Louisville playing for Western Kentucky. How did it happen? And where does Charles Bassey compare to some of the most talented players that Rick Stansberry has ever had? We find out coming up next on the College Hoops Today podcast when Rick Stansberry, the head coach of Western Kentucky, joins the show.
Well,
Western Kentucky became a national story in college basketball last week when it landed a commitment from five-star recruit Charles Bassey. Bassey, a 19 prospect, reclassified into the 2018 class, and the head coach of the Hilltoppers, Rick Stansberry, now joins the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Coach, my first question is, when was the moment that you realized that Charles Bassey reclassifying was a real possibility?
You know, John, you know, I think it's like a lot of these kids nowadays. I think there's about 15 of them at this point that's reclassifying. And I think it's something that they brought to my attention probably, you know, back in January and December and January. It's a possibility. They look around and see all these other top players doing it. And, you know, he probably felt like he's as good as they were. It's probably getting, as the season went on, he probably felt like he was getting a little bit bored or wasn't as challenged as much. And you could understand it became a real reality.
Now, you had several talented players during your tenure at Mississippi State as an assistant and as a head coach. You were an assistant in 1996 when the Bulldogs went to a Final Four. You were also an assistant on a Texas A&M team that went to the Sweet 16 in 2016. Where does the talent level of Charles Bassey compare to some of the other talented players that you've coached during your career?
Well, you know, I guess we'll see as time goes on. You know, I've had some guys you may think are really talented come in and is not as productive, and you got some other guys who wasn't highly recruited, like a Jarvis Bernardo, that ends up being the all-time leading shot blocker in the history of college basketball. But, you know, at a starting point, you know, Charles is right up at the top. You know, he's probably one of the highest-ranked kids. You know, Mario Austin was a really highly-ranked kid. You know, Eric Ganter played 18 years in the league, and, you know, he probably didn't come in as a, you know, a top 20 player. But, you know, on paper, you know, Charles is one of the better ones on paper. We'll see how that paper translates to the court now, John.
If there was one player, past or present, that Charles Bassey most reminded you of, who would it be?
You know, I think his defense is ahead of his offense. But I think his offense is much, much, much improved. I can't say I've had one, you know, like him. Eric Danter was more of a defensive presence. Jarvis was more of a defensive presence. Charles had more offense, either one of those guys. You know, Mario Lawson was an offensive guy, wasn't a defensive guy. He's kind of a mixture of different guys. I'm not so sure I've had one quite like him for sure. But, you know, hey, John, we like his abilities. And, you know, most importantly, you know, things people don't know about him is this. You know, he's almost a perfect student, you know, a 3.92 student. Man, he's a great kid. Those are things that sometimes gets lost in y'all's basketball world that people don't know, and that's what makes him even a more special player.
Western Kentucky head coach Rick Stansberry joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Now, we have seen in the last 10 years a shift in college basketball in terms of teams that are capable of going far in the NCAA tournament. We saw in 2011 both VCU and Butler make the Final Four. Last year we saw it with Loyola Chicago. Is it easier to sell kids on playing outside of a power conference because of what we've seen in the NCAA tournament the last 10 years with teams like that making runs to the Final Four?
Well, I think there's no question there is, John. You can look around. There's probably more parity like that than there has been, you know, ever in college basketball. And, you know, one thing about Western Kentucky, yeah, you know, we have a lot of tradition. You know, people and players are shocked when you tell them that, you know, only two other teams in the history of college basketball have won more championships in Western Kentucky. You know, it's only Kentucky and Kansas. And, you know, they look at you cross-eyed at first until you show them the list and show them the facts. You know, now naturally that's been a while back, but it's still tradition. You know, so we have tradition. We have great facilities. I love basketball here. So once we get a young man on this campus, you know, it's one thing I think we have, maybe some Power Five schools don't have sometimes because of numbers, is, you know, we can sell them an opportunity to go somewhere doing something special and being impactful. Where maybe you go somewhere else, you got to split time and, you know, there's nothing there that hadn't been done before. So, you know, in some ways, it's, you know, it's easier still.
Now, unless it's a unique circumstances, Conference USA, for the most part, and this is another thing that's going to come with playing at Western Kentucky, for now, has been a one-bid league, you know, over the past couple of years. How difficult is it, from your perspective, to put a schedule together that's going to give you opportunities that if you're in a situation on Selection Sunday where you hope to have an at-large case?
Well, you know, John, you know, we kind of had that schedule in place last year, we thought, and probably didn't win all those games. So we played a Villanova, you know, lost 8 points to them early in the Battle of Atlantis. Then we beat a Purdue, who was a top 15 team, and beat a really good SMU team that was really good at the time when they were full speed. Then we lose a game, you know, in a controversial call at Wisconsin, and we thought we could have won. But there were some other games in that mix that, looking back, we should have won, could have won, that got us over the hump. And maybe that championship game last year, you know, in the Conference USA tournament, wouldn't have meant as much. Even though we had a 40-some RPI, we ended up with a 32 RPI after the NIT run. But
right.
It's very obvious after being around this league, yes, you know, you got to play a schedule, which I want to anyway. I want to play a schedule that makes us better, that challenges, and it only makes us better come Conference USA time. But our league is really good. You know, last year those top four or five teams in this league was really, really good. But perception is it's a one-bid league, and until we can get over that hump or someone else gets over the hump, wins enough non-conference games, that's the way you better approach it.
Now, for you, you coached in the SEC for a number of years, which obviously is a multi-bid league. What was it like for you last season to be coaching in a one-bid conference tournament? What was the pressure like in that situation compared to other pressure situations that you've endured as a head coach?
I don't know if it's any difference, John. I've learned this through the years, that you win enough games, you get in. If you don't get in. I've been in that situation in Mississippi State. You know, we went to the tournament 6 out of those 14 years, but it was 3 years, where literally the first or second team left out.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been on both sides of that bubble. Again, you know, I've learned not to worry about things you can't control. The things you control, win enough games, it takes care of itself. And that's basically, you know, what we do. You know, if we'd won some more games last year, if we'd beaten a Belmont that we lost a close game to, and, you know, we lost a tough game on the road, OIU, those kind of games will cost you here. But it'll cost you, you know, in the SEC too. I mean, there's a lot of teams felt like they maybe could have got in through the years. They come up one game short. One game can be the difference in, you know, getting in and not getting in. And like you say, that RPI stuff and all the, you know, parameters they put on it, it's all moving target year after year. So you better do the one thing that you're in charge of, and that's just win games. And I hope that takes care of it and help you win enough of the right games.
Western Kentucky head coach Rick Stansbury joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Now, your team went on a nice run in the postseason NIT, made the Final Four, but before that, you lost the chance to go to the NCAA tournament in a very close game against Marshall in the Conference USA tournament title game. What was the message to the returning guys after you lost to Marshall?
Well, at least we have some returning guys. Well, you know, that was everybody at the time. We'd lose to Marshall. You know, it was a tough loss. You know, we'd beat Marshall at their place by 25 or 27. We'd beat them here at home by 15. But I've always said winning and losing is a fine line, particularly when you get in a one-game scenario. And that last game of that tournament, you know, we ran into a really hot-shooting Marshall team, which they're capable of beating anybody when they shoot the basketball. Elmore, in particular, the second half went 6 for 10 the three-point line, and about 3 of those from 35 feet, as well as Wichita State found out the first round in the NCAA tournament how good they were. You know, our challenge was this, John, getting back up off that mat. You know, we had won whatever it was at that point. It felt like that, you know, we were an NCAA team, but you've seen teams in, they get NIT, don't get back up and get beat that first round. Well, we were fortunate enough to get a home game, and I guess the committee – you know, respected what we have done, our body of work, enough to send an ACC team into here, a really good Boston College team. And you know as well as I do, they were a team that was playing very well, had a good run in the ACC tournament, and they had two of the most talented guards in country. And for us to come in here and, you know, basically from start to finish. I think we ended up beating them 17 or 18. Then now you got to go on the road against a really good USC team that finished second in the Pac-12 at their place and find a way to win. And then you get sent again 2 days later to, you know, a very difficult place. You know, Oklahoma State, a team that very few people had gone in there and won. And we found a way to go in there, you know, in a pool of a, in front of a packed house, you know, a chance to go to New York, and kept taking blow after blow and found a way to get a win to get there. So our team, you know, I said this, you know, for up until the third week of January, we had 7 guys. And we got 2 guys eligible. One thing we had, John, that, you know, offsets maybe numbers and talent sometimes is we had a great rhythm. We had great chemistry of our bunch. We had great kids. And because of that, that gave us a chance to win and gave us a chance to get to Madison Square Garden. And if you don't play your best, you know, you go home. And give Utah credit. They played well and made the plays when they had to make plays. And we couldn't make enough plays, enough getting beat in that semifinal game.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You bring up the rhythm and the chemistry you had last year. Your team right now on paper is built to be deeper next season. How do you balance with what you had last year that worked with more options?
Well, last year we didn't quite have enough, John. I mean, like I said, we played, remember, until third week of January, 7 guys. That's more of a challenge than I would like. And things had to go just perfect for you not to have no injuries during that stretch. And again, remember, we took a Dwight Colby from Kansas. We averaged 1.7 at Kansas. And, you know, I thought he was better than that. I didn't know how good he could be, but he ended up being a force for us. And I think he had 16 double-doubles during the season and averaged, you know, like 12 points a game and 8 or 9 rebounds. And then we took a Darius Thompson from Virginia who averaged 5.5 points. And again, you know, you don't know how these guys are going to fit in, how good the roles can be, but, you know, he ended up being, you know, averaging 13, 14, 15 points a game. And both of those guys were huge factors for us. Because we only had one guy back, Justin Johnson, on that whole team, one guy, Justin. And like I said earlier, for us to come together in November even and play as well as we did against Villanova and beat a really experienced Purdue team with 4 seniors, our players deserve a lot of credit for, you know, them coming together and the chemistry and rhythm they had. So this year's team, you know, I mean, I like this team so far. I've had the opportunity to watch us play a few times, and we don't have them all in here yet, but I like our rhythm, I like our chemistry, and I do think our talent level is better. You know, at least I have 5 or 6 guys back from last year. You know, you like to get to the point, you know, that you don't have to go out and sign 7 or 8 guys. That's kind of where our program was being. But I think we've caught up now, and I think now we can really start recruiting better, be a little bit more selective, and not have to, you know, gamble as much on some kids because of the amount of numbers. But I like our kids right now, and I like them as people, number one. I think that's the one thing I can say. I don't know how many games we'll win, but I like our young men as people. We got a bunch of really good students, and because of that, I think it's a lot easier to mix that chemistry and get that rhythm with them.
Western Kentucky Coach Rick Stansbury joined the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Now, Coach, you know, before you went to Western Kentucky, you were at Texas A&M, and, you know, before that, you were the head coach of Mississippi State. But when you stopped coaching at Mississippi State in 2012, you took 2 years off from the sport. How did that recharge you?
Well, those are the best 2 years of my life, John. And I've told a lot of coaches this. If coaches who've been in it for a long time, you know, at that point, you know, I was approaching about 30 years. And yep. Understand 22 of them at Mississippi State. And that's not the easiest place, you know, every year to compete. You know, and probably, John, one thing a lot of people don't know in those 14 years as head coach, only Kentucky and Florida won more games than we did during that time. And we didn't have a lot of great players. We had good players that we kind of put together. And, you know, they stayed 4 years, and we got some rhythm and chemistry from them. And that's how we were successful with them. But, you know, you come a point in your career that, you know, those 2 years I was away, I had 3 young boys still. They were probably 7, 9, 11 at that point. And for the first time in my life, you know, I was able to lay that cell phone down you know, wrap my arms totally around them and be totally embraced with them and basically do things I never had a chance to do. You know, we basically traveled the country and, you know, we took a 10 or 12 week cross country trip and went to most of the national parks in the West Coast and had a chance to spend a lot of time in Europe. And, you know, John, different than you, you know, I like to fish and hunt, which I know you know nothing about, neither one. So I had a chance to take my boys, you know, all do a lot of hunting, and, you know, whitetail hunting, elk hunting, and do a little fishing. So, you know, after a while, you know, you get to miss it a little bit. And something you've done all your life and you love doing. And but no question, you know, like I said, a couple of years away, you had a chance to take a deep breath, reflect on the good and the bad, and recharge your batteries. And, you know, I felt like I came in going to A&M, you know, better than I was before when I left. So, and same way when you come up here, some things you look at differently than maybe I looked at 10 years ago. You know, just some things, the way I maybe would approach different things. You have a chance to get away from it and look back. So, but the time away was really good, John.
How are you different as a head coach now versus prior to taking that time off?
Well, a couple things. Number one, you know, I don't feel guilty at all being away from home, away from my kids. You know, I got to the point, you know, every time I'd come home, Dad, you come to soccer game, you come into our Little League game, or my basketball game, as always, can't make it, no, no, no. Well, those 2 years, I built up a lot of equity with my boys and my wife. Because like I said, and you know me well enough, John, that I kept my family with me, even in Mississippi State, wherever we traveled. They went to every game, so as much as any head coach had been with me. But it's not the same. It wasn't the same. Still, they're with you. You're always recruiting. You're always on the phone. You're probably not engaged as much. But the 2 years away, you really got engaged. And all we did things together. So, you know, now there's zero guilt being away, number one. Number two, you know, I look at things a little differently. You know, maybe in the past, you try to maybe get as many good players you can. And maybe sometimes you may take a higher risk on a really talented guy that you question some things about him. Well, that part I'm going to eliminate, you know, every time now. You know, we inherit enough problems with kids that you know nothing about. And once you get them, you find out some things about them you didn't know. You know, to take a kid that has issues, you know, I'm too old for that. I don't want that headache in my life. Now, again, I'll take less talent with more character and go win with it. And that's where I'm at. And particularly with a place like Western Kentucky, you've got a great community. You know, people are really involved with your players. They want to reach out and touch them. It's a small enough community where you go in the state of Kentucky that they love basketball. Everybody recognizes who they are. And I want good people. I want to be around them. I want guys that you can come to practice every day and you can coach them, not worrying about if somebody's moved. And again, we all get enough issues, not knowing the issues we get. But I'm going to eliminate the issues I know that you're getting before I get them if I can.
Well, and you probably had to deal with that even more so when you were an assistant to Texas A&M because you were back in an assistant role. What was it like and how did your perspective change during those couple of years at A&M after being a successful SEC head coach to be an SEC assistant?
Well, first off, it was easy for me, John, real easy. You know, I was totally at peace with it. I was happy. I enjoyed my 2 years at Texas A&M. It took a special place for me to leave there. I enjoyed College Station. You know, I enjoyed that program. We got that program going. And me stepping away and being a head coach, being an assistant, you know, that was a really easy role for me. And like I said, you know, I was always a guy. I'm very comfortable and confident in what we had accomplished at Mississippi State. I didn't need no accolades. I didn't want no praise for nothing. I basically stayed in the background and Coach Kennedy did a great job with that team, and, you know, I just filled in whatever they needed me at to help. And, you know, like I said, we had great facilities down there. We had good kids, too, and that's why we were able, you know, the first year, get them back to the NIT, and the second year, win the league and get the Sweet 16. So those were enjoyable years. Like I say, it was an easy road for me to step away from being a head coach and just do the things that was asked of me there. So, but when the Western Kentucky thing came available, You know, it was too good for me to say no to. It's back home. You know, I grew up, you know, I had some connections here through my grandpa's brother who coached here for years. I knew the tradition of this place. I knew how important basketball was. I can remember when Western Kentucky back in the 70s was going to the Final Four, how they were the best program in the state. And again, you know, my goal was to get this thing back and, you know, get people back in this arena and, you know, people kind of, even though they'd had some good teams through the years, just hadn't competed consistently and kind of the, you know, the crowds had dropped off some. But we got it back going last year, sold out four of the last five games, and I'll be disappointed that first game, whoever it is against, there are people knocking on those doors who can't get in next year. I would anticipate every ticket being sold out preseason. And people who don't know about Western Kentucky, you know, I'll say this, that the arena is probably as good as two-thirds of the SEC arenas are born. There's not many arenas that have skyboxes like we do here. You know, we got 18 skyboxes. You know, it's built for basketball. We just you know, put in a $2.5 million new, you know, Jumbotron at both ends. So a lot of exciting things happening here, John, with basketball right now.
Well, and obviously, any great coach is going to have great players, and players are always going to be the first and most important thing involved in any program. We've talked about Charles Bassey. You add to Sean Murray, who was a starter last year for an Auburn team that won a piece of the SEC regular season title. A couple of years ago, you got a kid, Josh Anderson, who you beat NC State out for. Why at Western Kentucky can you do what many thought you'd need to be in a power conference to do?
Well, I think anybody who understands basketball knows you can do it at Western Kentucky. And my question back to you would be, why not? When I talk about the tradition of Western, like I said, there's only two other teams that won more championships than Western Kentucky, Kentucky and Kansas. And there's only six teams in college basketball who have more 20-win seasons than Western Kentucky. A lot of people don't know that. You need to put that out in your real world out there, John, the tradition of Western. And when people come here and see our facilities, and the people in the basketball world knows the tradition of Western, people who understand basketball, they know what this place has done through the years. And I would think most people knows what we accomplished at Mississippi State with less. Why can't we do it here? And that's what my question would be, why can't you do it here? You know, some people say, well, why has Charles Bassey come to Western Kentucky? My question back is, why not? You know, some of these schools, a lot of schools get five or six Charles Basseys per year. Why can't Western Kentucky have one? Well, we can't. You know, some guys, you know, want to go somewhere where they can be impactful. Some guys want to go somewhere where they can be special. And that's always the advantage we have as a sale. You know, there's one good thing all good coaches have in common, they have good players. Some of them just have more good players than others. You see a trend of good players maybe going to, you know, Nevada picked up the big boy out there this year. Why shouldn't he be there? Those guys had a great year. He didn't have to go to UCLA. Why can't Charles Bassey come to West Kentucky versus going to Kentucky where they have five or six of them? You know, why can't you sell him on the opportunity to be special and be impactful? And I think that's the one thing that, you know, people sometimes don't understand. Relationships mean a whole lot in recruiting. That's what recruiting's about, relationships. And if you got experience in this basketball world, I've been at about 34 years, you build up a lot of relationships. And it ain't for everybody. West Kentucky's not for everybody, but for the right kid, it's one of the best places in the country for a young man. So, and no question with Charles's personality. Charles was a kid I've been recruiting since he got here, you know, almost 4 years ago, when I was at Texas A&M. First coach that ever met him, first coach started recruiting him. I kept that relationship. I can remember driving from College Station to San Antonio two different mornings for a 5 a.m. workout. That first year he was there. It didn't take me long to see this kid had an opportunity and ahead of him. And, you know, it was a long relationship with his guardian, the guy I knew since he was assistant at Jackson State in Mississippi. So that relationship and, you know, paid off. And again, Charles was a very loyal guy, and he'd been up there several times through the years. And again, to me, it's a perfect fit for him, his personality, and no question, he's going to help us be a better team.
Well, you know, you had a team last year that didn't have a player the caliber of Charles Bassey, and you probably were an inch or two away from going to the NCAA tournament. When you didn't make the NCAA tournament, you beat several high-major teams on the road going to the Final Four of the postseason NIT. With Bassey in tow and with what you know about your team right now, as you sit in your staff meetings and you forecast for next season, what is the expectation internally you have for your team?
John, we like our team. I mean, our expectations every year are going to be win championships. But, you know, on paper at this time of the year, you ask me, do I like his team better than last year on paper? You know, absolutely. What I've seen, absolutely. Now, does that translate out? Can we be as good to go beat a, you know, a team like Purdue and USC and Oklahoma State and all those teams? We'll find out. But I like our position where we're at with the people we have, because I have good kids again, good young men. And I think we got some different pieces that will move around a little bit. I think I have a lot more ability to be a better defensive team from a quickness standpoint. You know, we're going to make a couple tweaks and probably move a guy around in the position he hadn't played a lot. We'll see how that works. If it works, then I think it makes us a lot better team from a chemistry and a rhythm standpoint. So at this point, John, I like where we're at, and I do like our team.
You know, we've seen in college basketball certain programs, like we talked about earlier, kind of come out of nowhere, go deep and, you know, in the NCAA tournament, and then the program becomes such a magnet for the sport that it becomes so good at a certain place that the head coach doesn't ever feel the need to leave. You've been, you know, an SEC head coach, a successful one at Mississippi State. With the players that you're getting and the support that you have at Western Kentucky, do you envision in the next 2 to 4 years that this program can become a VCU nationally, can become a Nevada, can become a Wichita State? Is that the goal right now over the next couple of seasons?
Hey, John, if I was to ask you that question, you ask people across college basketball, what would you think the answer would be to that?
Absolutely.
Okay. No question about it. You know, a lot of guys, when they first get into coaching, they go to Western Kentucky, first opportunity they get, they won't try to go maybe to the SEC. That's okay. That's all good. And you know, SEC, after spending – you know, being there 22 years and 14 as a head coach, it's a great league. I've been there, spent a lot of time there. But there's some things about Western Kentucky that we have better than a lot of SEC schools. Number one, there's a passion for basketball here. It's not that way everywhere in the SEC in the South.
Right.
There's a lot of arenas that's, you know, half full, half empty, more or less. I've seen it for all those years. It wasn't just not consistently the passion for it. Well, we have passion here. Our fans are very passionate about basketball. It's not that football is not important. They've been pretty good, won championships. But just like at University of Kentucky, they start having Midnight Madness. When there's a football game going on, what happens is a football game. It empties, they go watch Midnight Madness. That wouldn't happen in the South anywhere. Once you cross... you get a little bit deeper down there. It doesn't happen that way. So, but here, to answer your question, because of those built-in advantages, the passion for basketball, our facilities, the support, Bowling Green's a town of 100,000 people. You know, it's a great town. Plenty of things to do here. You know, my question back would be, why can't we become a Gonzaga, Wichita State? You know, John Butler's done. You know, one thing all those schools has in common, and we don't have, they don't have football. But why can't we become that kind of school, John?
Fair question. I'm going to leave you with this. This is my final thing for you. You go to the Final Four as an assistant in 96. You lose to Syracuse. Obviously, it was a great moment for Mississippi State. And you had a team probably at Texas A&M in 2016 that could have been a Final Four team, but you lost to Oklahoma in the Sweet 16. Once you get a taste of being part of a Final Four, is that something that resonates in your head every week, couple of weeks? How often does Rick Stansbury think about getting back at some point or having an opportunity to get back?
You know, I don't think about the Final Four a lot, John, because it's a fine line. There's a lot of good teams every year, that have unbelievable seasons don't get to the Final Four. Winning and losing is a fine, fine line. You know, you look back, I think Kansas County, you know, they win, what, 10, 11 straight, 12 straight Big 12 championships.
14.
Excuse me, I didn't mean to shortcut them a couple. And had a difficult time getting to the Final Four consistently, even though their people expect them to be there every year. But, you know, was getting beat a lot, you know, in the second round, whatever it was. That don't mean that they're not a good team, that it's not a great program. It's just a fine line. You get in a one-game scenario, you know, any team that makes it, the NCAA are good teams. I had those years at Mississippi State. We had a team ranked as number two in the country in 204. A team that was 25-2 in a regular season, won the SEC, but didn't get beat in the second round against, you'll remember this, a very, really good Xavier team with Chalmers and all that.
Sato.
They were one shot away from going to Final Four. So it is about matchups. It is about timing. So, you know, I think about this all the time. You know, I think about putting the teams together. It gives us a chance to win championships and give us a chance to be in the NCAA. And once you get that NCAA tournament, you know, anything can happen on a one-day scenario. Let's go back to Loyola last year. Who would have expected them to get the Final Four? Nobody in the country. But when you get in there, you know, that matchups are so important. You know, one difference in a call here or there, one missed free throw, is a difference in advancing because there is so much more parity today than there has been in college basketball.
Well, Coach, we appreciate a couple minutes. You guys are obviously nationally relevant. That's why we're talking to you. Best of luck in the July recruiting period and look forward to keeping in touch along the way.
Thanks, John.
We'd like to thank Western Kentucky head coach Rick Stansbury for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein on iTunes. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. We have the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also, want to remind you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review, let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And time now for our social media portion of the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Send me your questions on Twitter. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. And our first question comes from Tyler Oaken, and it's, John, who do you think is Kansas's biggest challenger as they try for 15 straight Big 12 titles? It has to be Kansas State. You have a veteran team with the Wildcats who got all that experience last year going to the Elite Eight, losing to Loyola Chicago, but TCU and also West Virginia not far behind. Our next question comes from Mark Frigg, and it's, John, barring any late additions, who do you think will wind up starting at point guard for Seton Hall? This I can tell you. Quincy McKnight, the transfer from Sacred Heart, is going to get first crack, was a highly productive scorer in the Northeast Conference before transferring to Seton Hall. But remember the name Anthony Nelson. From everything I'm hearing outside of Seton Hall offseason workouts, the freshman has been very impressive early. Don't be shocked if he gets a major crack at what we're going to see at the point guard spot next year for the Pirates. And our next question is going to come from Max Goring. And it's, John, what is your predictions for St. Louis? Do they have what it takes to make a run? St. Louis is one of these teams, like Western Kentucky, like Nevada, outside the power conferences and the Big East, that have the personnel to become a national story next year. St. Louis, again, had off-the-court issues last year, had an early-season win against Virginia Tech, but was around 500 the entire season because of all the personnel issues. But you look right now at this St. Louis team, Jordan Goodwin is going to be a sophomore. You've got a Michigan State transfer in Javon Best that could be one of the better players in the Atlantic 10. Cartier Gordon is an addition of substance, a highly touted freshman. You could also say the same thing about Louis Santos, the transfer from South Florida. This, to me, is the team to beat in the Atlantic 10, and we'll continue to talk more Atlantic 10 as we progress into our conference previews moving forward in June, July, and August. Now that we've got your social media needs taken care of, let's get to some nuggets.
Five good nuggets.
Five.
Five.
Six.
No, five. But you were close.
nugget number one, Lexington bound. You know, I have learned from several sources that Stanford grad transfer Reed Travis is going to visit Kentucky early this week. He will be immediately eligible for next season. I expect Travis to commit to Kentucky this week. Now, what does that mean for the Wildcats? You're adding somebody who was going to be the Pac-12 preseason player of the year. Now, what does that mean in terms of how is he going to handle having maybe a lesser role than he would at Stanford? That is John Calipari's specialty. But Reed Travis graduated Stanford on Sunday, expected to be in Lexington early this week, and the expectation is that he will commit to Kentucky and be eligible for next season. Nugget number two, Hall in. I've got so much respect for the way Kevin Willard is scheduling at Seton Hall. Look at this non-conference schedule. Home games against St. Louis, Louisville, and Rutgers. Road games at Nebraska and Maryland. Neutral site games against Kentucky at Madison Square Garden. And then three games at the Wooden Legacy. That's nine games potentially against high major competition. When you have that type of an opportunity in the non-conference portion of the schedule, you're not relying on conference play. And that's important next year as the Big East doesn't look to be up to par. Nugget number three. The biggest takeaway I have from the A-10 conference pairings from last week, St. Louis, again, the league's most talented team, is going to play St. Joe's and Rhode Island twice. That's more quad one opportunities for the Billikens. And getting back to what I was saying about the Big East, the conference feels like it's headed for a dip. The type of quad one opportunities that existed last year may not be available for Big East teams. That's a thing to track moving forward into 18-19. Speaking of the Big East, nugget number four, another cat milestone. I firmly believe Thursday night could be another program-changing night for Villanova at the NBA draft. Now, why? You think about the NBA draft, and it's always about Kentucky and Duke taking center stage because they have so many players drafted. Villanova's got a real chance to have four players, Jalen Brunson, Mikal Bridges, Dante DiVincenzo, Omari Spellman, taken in the first round of the 2018 NBA draft. And nugget number five, beware the calendar. It's going to be a long season next year in 18-19, so college hoops junkies, brace yourself now. Practice, according to an NCAA official, will begin on September 25th. The first games of the season, November the 6th, and the national title game isn't until April the 8th in Minneapolis. We would like to thank Western Kentucky head coach Rick Stansbury for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. We'll be back next week with our first conference preview edition of the off-season college basketball breakdown sequence that we do every single year, and we will be previewing the ACC. Again, we'll be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel. This was the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein.